Hey soccer friends, I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of TeamPlayer's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us. And come give TeamPlayer a look. Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them. And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order. Hello and welcome back to Chat by the Pitch. This is Ian Babcock, your host. This week I have Katie Heap, former Houston Dash player, former professional player in Europe, and former college soccer player. She has started a company called Future Athletic. Now, this is to help families get their players ready for college and trying to get them placed into college the best way that you can. So let's start this chat and head to the pitch.
My name's Katie Heap. I am a former pro soccer player. Currently, I'm running a couple of my own businesses. I think my biggest goal now after my playing career is to, you know, kind of give back to the game that gave me everything. So that's my biggest goal. So that's kind of what a couple of my businesses are geared towards. But to kind of bring it back, start from the beginning, I grew up in McKinney, Texas, so just north of Dallas. I played for Sting. That was my club soccer team. I was a Sting lifer, so which is pretty rare. I was there my entire playing career. I probably had three coaches while I was there, and one was Tattoo. He was my coach for most of my career, and who I really give a lot of my development, you know, too, really, because, you know, he's Brazilian. He's focused on the things I currently love, and that's what made me the player I am. And now that's kind of how I coach. But he, you know, really focused on the skills and the technical abilities of our team. And I think that's why we were so successful. We won 3 national championships together. After my Sting career, I went on to play college soccer at Texas Tech University under head coach Tom Stone. Absolutely loved my playing career there. I wish I had 4 more years there. The process of developing as a person and as a soccer player was incredible. We won a Big 12 championship my senior year. We also were in the NCAA tournament all 4 years I was there as well, which at the time was like, you know, one of the best times of the program. And I think the best we did in NCAA tournament, I want to say Sweet 16, but don't quote me on that. I'm pretty sure it was the Sweet 16 was kind of the furthest we got in the NCAA tournament. And then we won the Big 12 tournament my senior year, which was awesome. First one in program history. And then after my playing career, I went on to play professional soccer. That was always my dream. My dream, since I was little, since my dad, you know, told me about the sport, you know, that was my dream, was to play professional soccer. And I knew college soccer was, for me, was the pathway to get there, just for development. And, you know, of course, you know, I wanted to get my degree and things like that. But I entered into the draft after my senior year, for here in the States in the NWSL. Randy Waldrum was the Houston Dash coach at the time. And luckily for me, he knew who I was because, frankly, he scouted our club team a lot. And then also Tom Stone was his player back in the day. Back when my college coach was in high school soccer, Randy Waldrum was his head coach, which is so cool. So they had great relations. I entered into the draft. I actually did not get drafted. So that was kind of an interesting thing that happened to me, that I didn't get drafted. But I got a call from Randy saying, hey, I have like one pick in this draft, or I think it was one or two picks, maybe the year I was in the draft. And he was like, you know, selfishly, I hope you don't get drafted. Like I want you. But you know, we'll kind of just see what happens. And so I ended up not getting drafted. I was very upset about that, but I knew that, you know, he wanted me, and he wanted me to come into training camp. So that summer I went in, before like the official team training camp. So there was kind of like a training camp before the training camp, of people who didn't get drafted, who were just kind of trying to get some looks. So I ended up going to that, performed well. And then they invited me to the team training camp, which was great. I performed well there. I think I showcased, you know, what I could bring to the table, and I ended up getting signed my first year out of college. So that was a big deal for me. I did not get drafted, but I ended up signing in my first year, where I had teammates who got drafted and actually didn't even sign their first year. But it worked out for me, which was amazing. Randy was a great coach. I really, you know, give him a lot of giving me the opportunity to pursue my dreams of professional soccer. So I was at the Dash for 2 years. And then after my 2 years there, we were entering into our third year. I had a signed contract and we were getting a new coach. And I was very excited about this because I had proven myself. I, especially if you look at the teammates that I got to play with at the Houston Dash my first 2 years, Carly Lloyd, Morgan Bryan, Rachel Daly, Australian national team, Irish national team, Brazilian national, a lot of national team players I got to play with, which was incredible. And I would say that that's where I excelled the most in, was just being around those types of players, training with them. I doubled my playing time in the second year. I think both my first and second year, I got two starts, which was cool. Doubled my playing time into my second year. And then, so going into my third year, I was like, this is going to be great. You know, I've proved myself, you know, I've played with an incredible team. Let's do it. So the coach that got signed, she ended up, taking my contract away from me, the day before our training camp started, this could be a whole other, you know, kind of story, but I'll just like get through it briefly. But she took my contract from me the day before our training camp. And I said, okay, well, I don't really have another place to go right now, since tomorrow, everybody starts training camp tomorrow. But I'm going to prove myself. I've done it before. You know, I know what I need to do. I think the talent of players that were brought in, that I could definitely compete. I've had the 2 years experience. And so the first like 3 days of training camp, I could barely pass a soccer ball. I was so in my head about that decision, and it really kind of affected my playing time, or not playing time because we were in training camp, but just like my play those first 3 days of camp. And so after that, I just kind of I read some books about kind of the mental side of the game, and that really helped me. So one of my books that I tell my kids about to read that kind of got me through that mental block was How Champions Think by Dr. Bob Rotella. So y'all should definitely check that out. He's much more of a, he talks a lot about golf because he works with golf athletes and the mental side of their game. Now he references multiple sports and things like that, but for the most part, it's a lot of like golf lingo, I guess. But right, relatable across all sports. And so by the end of the training camp, you know, I still felt like I proved myself. I kind of got out of my funk. And I just kind of developed a mentality like I have nothing to lose here, you know. So by the end of training camp, she still didn't want to take me on. So that's when I actually decided to go over to Europe for the first time. So my first season abroad in Europe was in Sweden. I played in the second division in Sweden, Elitettan. Incredible league, super competitive. I think I fit in well, like with their style of play. And I had a great time. First time abroad by myself. I was nervous and scared and all these things, but ended up being like an amazing time. So after that season, I had a really good season, lots of goals, assists, you know, good for the highlight tape and in terms of taking it to kind of the next place for the next year, because I wanted to get to a higher level. Honestly, I wanted to stay in the Swedish league and get into their first division, but it just didn't end up working out like that. So after that season, I went on to play for Sparta, AC Sparta, and Prague, in the Czech Republic. You know, they play Champions League, which was really cool. You know, that's kind of was one of my factors. It was a bigger club. They play in the first division, but not a super competitive league. Like it was basically them and the other Prague team that kind of dominated that league. So in terms of like competitiveness of the league, I don't think it was as competitive as like the Swedish second division league. And then I ended up getting injured. So I tore my ACL for the second time, my other knee. And I decided to, it was kind of a blessing in disguise that, you know, I got to get out of my contract and come back home. You know, I don't think I was in a good place like mentally there. I had a couple injuries early on when I got there, and then just culturally just wasn't for me. And I'm kind of comparing it to, which, you know, right, comparison kind of kills, but I was comparing it to my Swedish experience, you know. Anyways, so I got injured. I got out of my contract, got to come home, surgery, rehab. I said, well, I want to take the year to get more mentally right than physically right because I've been through it before, you know. And then COVID ended up hitting. So it kind of worked out. So I got to really take the year to get right and figure out if I still wanted to keep playing. I played a little local semi-pro just to kind of get back into it and really say, hey, do I want to still do this? And so I decided I still wanted to go do it. And so my last season, which I didn't know was going to be my last season at the time, I played in Iceland. I was very specific on the number one, the place, because, you know, I wanted to make sure culturally I got, you know, along with the culture and I could fit in. And it turned out to be an amazing experience. I probably had the most successful in terms of like stats in my pro career. But just like by the end of it, I kind of felt different. I knew that I was a very passionate player. If you talk to people that played that I played with in my club days, that would be very interesting to hear them kind of talk about my club days, because I was a player that played with a lot of passion. You know, I talked to the refs. I probably got a million yellow cards in my club career, right? Talking to the ref, more so, honestly, to about my teammates, you know, and just saying, "Hey, ref, you know, that's a foul right there," very nicely. After kind of that, it just, you know, the wins felt different, the losses didn't hurt as bad, and I just felt like kind of there was more to life than this, and I wanted to kind of move on and make an impact in a different way. So I retired after my Iceland season, and then since then, I've kind of been going full force on, my few businesses, and yeah, I mean, basically, I've been coaching since college. I started HS Academy, which is my skills academy, while I was playing at the Dash. I was probably making more money doing that than actually playing. And that's kind of where my coaching and my love for like kind of the one-on-one small group type training began. And then it kind of has grown from there. But since my retirement, I've gotten to like really kind of focus on those things and just start to build that.
Can you please give me a good overview of what you're trying to do with Future Athletic?
Yeah, so Future Athletic is my college recruiting company. So previously, before I went off to Iceland and I kind of had that time after my injury, and when I went off to Iceland, I worked with and I ran the soccer department for a recruiting company. So that was like my kind of first taste of like taking my experience and my network and, me being able to say, hey, Johnny and Sally, I've been through this process, so that was kind of my first taste of like really like mentoring and guiding in the recruiting process. And so now I get to kind of bring my own, philosophies and ideas together with my own company. So I branded Future Athletic as a overall recruiting company with hopes in the future of maybe someone like me comes in and does the basketball, does the baseball, does the football, right? There's a lot of, sports. And so first we're gonna of course start with soccer. And so that's kind of what I'm working on right now and what I've just recently launched. I've always kind of had the idea of like this is something I want to do because I think of like the full circle of the athlete and my training, the technical and tactical side of the game, kind of that's like HS Academy. And now I can kind of now gear these athletes towards, hey, we got to think about the college recruiting side. And so kind of this is where Future Athletic comes in. And now I get to, mentor and guide these families through this process in hopes of, them being more comfortable and confident going into it and finding the perfect fit like for their kid. Not what their parents want, not what their coaches want, what this kid as a player and person really wants. And so that's kind of my big focus with Future Athletic is understanding what the player wants. And of course the parents, I'm not saying no to the parents. But at the end of the day, this kid is going to be there for 4 years, right? And they need to like it. And they need to be thinking about things outside of just their sport, So of course, number one, I take a look at the player and I say, okay, here's kind of where I think you are. Here's where I think you could potentially get. But it's up to you to kind of get there and put in the work to get there. And so I kind of give them like a starting point and we build our school list. And, I also, since I've been through the process myself, I can say, hey, you got to think about these things too, which is life outside of soccer. If you get injured, are you going to be happy in, maybe in a college where it's not a very big town? Are you going to be happy where it's a big city, where are you going to be happy? And in terms of also the studies, right? So we gotta look at the academics, we gotta look at the location. What are you wanting to study? Maybe, maybe SMU doesn't have your degree you're interested in. Well, should we waste our time, trying to talk to that coach? Maybe, maybe not. Maybe you can kind of go a different route. But these are the types of things that I can really help guide and mentor both like the player and the family.
So when you're going through the process of selecting these players, are you being selective on accepting everyone, or are you trying to fill certain boxes? I know that GPA is important. I know that outside of school activities and outside of soccer activities are very important when trying to apply for college. So how do you navigate on saying like, well, X, Y, and Z plays a factor if you're not being recruited already, trying to get into a college program, you need this done. How do you filter out or help parents understand? And what is the age goal that you're trying to start working with? Sorry for the three-part question.
Good question. So, yeah, so I am selective because I do need to see all those things. I need to see, number one, the player. And now there's a ton of schools out there. So, you know, that's not necessarily like the end all be all. Like if it's a lower level player, I'm okay with that. You know, like it doesn't have to be a D1 player. I've helped a player get into a D1 school. So I have that kind of, you know, on my resume, I guess you would say. But the playing thing, it's not like a end all be all. Like, yes, I need to look at their play and I need to be like, okay, they can play in college, but this is the level that they're at. You know, sometimes parents are okay with hearing that, sometimes not. But the thing is I'm going to be realistic, right? And I'm going to be honest. I'm not going to lie and be like, okay, well, Johnny can go D1 when I don't think he can go D1. Because if it comes to a point to where, you know, maybe this player needs to talk to some coaches, I'm fine with reaching out to coaches on their behalf. But I am not going to do that if I don't actually believe that they can play there, because it's my name on the line. You know, I want to continue to build these relationships with college coaches, and I want them to trust me and trust like my eye of players. So that is one thing. So I'm going to look at your game film. The other thing is the academic side. If you are not performing in the classroom, you are not going to be eligible to play on the field. So that is a big one for me is the academic side. You don't need to be a perfect 4.0 student, because I was not. I had to work for my grades, right? I wasn't the smartest kid in the class, but I knew that I wanted to go play college soccer and that I needed to get good grades and I needed my studies. So I did prioritize that, but I was not a, you know, top 10%, you know, in high school. I wasn't. And so I do definitely look at that. And I look at the family as well. You know, I look at who they're surrounding themselves, you know, who the player is surrounding themselves with, because that's what a college coach is going to do as well. You know, not only am I, and let's say a college coach, going to sign Johnny up to be a part of Future Athletic, but I'm also signing up the family, right? And I think, you know, one of my biggest like tips for parents is like, listen, like you are a reflection of your kids. So if you're being crazy on the sidelines and a college coach is there and can see that, you know, they're going to question, hey, do I really want them a part of my program? Because not only do I have to deal with the player, I've got to deal with these parents too, right? So I consider all of everything. You know, another thing, a big thing that we do at Future Athletic is like, there's a code. So, you know, I have academics in there. I have, okay, if you get in trouble, you know, with the law, I have social media that we keep an eye on your social media, and being all in, you know, there's codes that I read to the kids and the parent, and I make them sign, because these are the things that, you know, if they get in trouble with the law, well, a college coach might not want them a part of their program, you know? So we got to make sure like they're now a part of an elite program with Future Athletic, and I'm going to hold them to a higher standard, because that's going to help prep them for the college experience. And then I can go into the age. I forgot the second question.
No, you're good. So what age would you like to start recruiting at? Because I know legally they can't start until a certain point, but as I've learned, starting at 14 is okay to reach out to a college. Doesn't mean you're going to get looked at, because they won't reach back. But what age do you recommend families then to start using a program like yours?
Yeah, great question. So I say start early. So for me specifically, the earliest I will want to take is eighth grade. And I know it sounds so young, and it is young, but you know, the more you can start early, the thing is you have time on your side. You know, I'd much rather start with an eighth, ninth grader than a senior, because they have no time. There might be zero scholarship dollars available out there, right? And I think if you start early enough, you know, you're going to have time. And with the right guidance, you know, we're going to have the right cadence of everything. We're not going to feel rushed. The process is already, you know, complex and stressful and all of these things. But if you know, you can get someone on your team like myself or somebody else within your circle that can kind of help guide you and be like, no, don't do this. Okay, do this. Okay, you're going to go to a college, you know, a showcase. Well, we need to email these coaches like, hey, that you're going to be here. That kind of thing. So I help guide on that part, but I would say eighth grade is like the earliest. So eighth and ninth grade is kind of that sweet spot for me. Now I'll still take a senior, right? I still want to help anybody that I can, but the time is shrunk down, you know? So that's kind of my biggest, another tip for parents is start early. I know eighth grade is early, but start talking to your kid about, hey, you know, do you want to play college soccer? Okay. If you do, hey, well, we need to be looking at schools, like just do some research, you know, start putting together a list of schools. I started in eighth grade. And I started putting that list together then. And I ended up verbally committing my sophomore year of high school to Tech after I visited there. That's when I verbally committed, you know? So start as early as you can so you have time on your side and you don't feel rushed through the process.
Do you feel like you're building a brand for the player when you start like at eighth grade because they're so young? You talked about having the parents sign a social, like a code of conduct type of agreement with you, and they have to build a brand. And I know it's young. I mean, I see 5-year-olds and 6-year-olds with, not 5 and 6 year olds, I'm sorry. I see 8-year-olds, 9-year-olds. I mean, I guess you do have 5 and 6 year olds with social media accounts already showing their skill sets. And as a parent that understands a little bit of this world, I feel like, yeah, you're building them up, but they don't showcase enough at the younger age. Maybe if you have it all, and by the time they're 16 years old and their progression has been there the whole time. But at eighth grade, do you feel like it's building a brand for that individual player and that family so they can have a, so to speak, street cred in the community of whatever sport they may be playing or whatever you're helping them with? I mean, you're talking about athletes in general, but is it building like a street cred for them, or is it teaching them how to use those tools to be more progressive for themselves so they can advance?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think it's a little bit of both for the sense of, you know, I will be posting about the kids, right? So it's kind of like I'm marketing them in a way to college coaches. So when college coaches come to Future Athletic and they see the list of kids, they know that Future Athletic is a trustworthy brand because Katie knows what she's talking about, you know? But more so, it's the latter, which is I'm teaching these kids how to talk to coaches, how to use social media, how they can build their own brand. Because, you know, when they do get to college, there's a thing called NIL now, right? That is a whole wild, wild west that I don't necessarily know everything about, you know. I understand what it is. And also, right, if I think it's more NIL, I think is more so for those like football and basketball players. I think it's more so for those sports because those are like usually the big money grabbers for colleges, not necessarily soccer. Now, some programs, yes. But, you know, if I can help build, number one, have the player think of like, okay, their own brand and like, okay, well, what things do I like and do I want to represent? Well, maybe I can, you know, when I get into college, I can get some recovery equipment, you know, for free. So when I do travel, I can have that, you know. Or, you know, I love dogs. So, okay, let's start, you know, volunteering at, you know, the SPCA. So all of these things, you know, I do think of, but more so I want to help guide and direct the player, not necessarily do it for them. I will do things on my end and with my network and things like that, but more so, like I always say, like, I'm going to give you 110%. And you also need to give 110% because I'm not going to do everything for you. And you need to be just a part of the process of this as me. So that's kind of what I tell these families and players.
I like that. Now, I view social media can be used, like we were talking about making a brand for themselves, but I view it as a highlight clip. A coach can go in and watch. Instagram is a very good place for this, just because you can just post your videos and have highlight clips of yourself being successful or unsuccessful at the same time. I have been told many different views of that. So as you're helping them build everything and going through this process at eighth grade, where do you start putting your emphasis on for them then? Starting when they have time, because I feel like if you can start planning now versus their senior year, you have 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, 6 years for them to truly have a chance to build who they are. I mean, every eighth grade, you might do something different than 10th grade and a senior. So what would be the foundation then you would start at for an eighth grader?
Education. I'm not saying you need to be posting three times a day on social media to promote. No. Okay. They need to understand what the process is. They need to be educated on how to use social media for the positive. Right, because I think this is a big topic, and I want some of my kids don't even have social media, and I understand why, but I also say you need to get social media because the first thing that a college coach is going to do is go look at your social media, and if they want to see not only that you're a soccer player, right? They want to see the highlight videos and things like that, but they want to see who you are as a person, and I always say to parents, I'm like, listen, this is their like online resume. It's not gonna be, it could be the end all be all. It could be, right? If they post bad things and things like that. But that's why I will be monitoring all of my kids' social media so that they don't post anything stupid. But it can also be used for the better, right? And I want to use social media for the better. And so I do kind of educate them on, you know, things to post, like post highlights, yes. Post you in the gym, but post yourself with family. Be yourself. You know, po post, you know, you're going to go volunteer at the SPCA. Well, hey, how can we showcase this in the right way? So that when college coaches do go to the social media profiles, there's something there for them to see and just get a little taste. Because think about, right, a regular job. They're probably going to go look at all of your social medias and get a glimpse of like who this person is as a person. And so that's why I talk about social media, and I personally am for using social media. Now again, I understand it could be like that it could just be a bad thing for you as a player, right? One post or one tweet or one whatever could, right, get the negative side of things, but I always want to educate my kids on, you know, using it for the better.
I like that. Now, what other foundations do you work on then in eighth grade? You have obviously the social media side, which we just discovered to discuss, but do you focus on them strictly on education and kind of push the sport away because it shouldn't be the priority yet because they have a lot of growing still. I mean, how you play in eighth grade versus how you play as a senior are two different worlds and it's 6 years away. So what is your main focus at that age group then for them?
Yeah. So and I know you say 6 years, but hopefully they're verbally committed before then, right? So we've got, you know, less than 6 years, but essentially 6 years till they graduate. Once they verbally commit, it kind of changes the focus, right? So we talk about some different areas. So again, going back to the beginning, that eighth, ninth grade is education. It's understanding. You know, you may not know like what you want to study right this second, because guess what? I didn't know what I wanted to study either, right? I was, like I said, right, I wasn't the best student, but I know I loved soccer, so I wanted to get the good grades so I could go play at the next level. And actually my studies totally switched in college too, to where I think I was actually studying something I really enjoyed, so I became like a better student, right? But it's understanding, you know, I kind of give them a, again, at the beginning of our like first meeting that I have with kids after seeing their highlight video and things like that, I say, hey, here's where I think you're at. and here's where I think you can go. So like, let's look at these schools. What is like, what are some areas? What's your criteria? What do you like? You know, do you want to go to a school with a big football team? Okay, cool. Let's put that in your criteria. Now, and then let's build the list based off of that. Now, it's not saying that it can't change, right? Because, right, everybody's growing, their play's changing, they get better, things like that, right? And then we adjust from there. But it's really about just educating them and making them think about what I really want in the recruiting process and what I want in a program at the next level. And kind of trying to make them think like, hey, like, you know, I'm gonna be at this program for, you know, 2 to 4 years. So I need to really like it. I need to like the coach. So it is more so about education. But it's not to say that we don't do anything of like building our list and, you know, really kind of going through those steps, because once they kind of get the hang of it, as they get older, it becomes, you know, easier, and they're understanding why I'm telling them to do this. You know, the other thing I another like really cool tip that I teach my kids and what I did in my recruiting process was, I was at the time I was a midfielder forward. Okay, so of my list of schools, and I'm going to graduate in, you know, let's say 2026, I need to go to program X and look at who's going to be graduating, you know, what positions are going to be graduating. And if I can see there's only going to be one midfielder and one forward graduating and 10 defenders, well, okay, maybe that's not a program that I can make an impact on, you know. But if I see five or six midfielders forwards, you know, graduating, okay, I could come into this program and potentially play, potentially make an impact, potentially step on the field if I prove myself. So again, education is key for me, especially at the beginning. And then just helping them through like different like everyday things that potentially happen, or hey, I'm going to a showcase and there's going to be like, you know, these schools, should I email them? You know, should I do this? Should I do that? So it's just kind of guiding them through that process, but definitely at the beginning, a little bit more education, but still working on, hey, what is the end goal here? Or hey, you want to go to SMU? Okay, you're not here yet, but doesn't mean you can't get here. Let's start building that.
And as they progress, so what age can they make today? I know the rules have are constantly changing with college at college commitment, because they could commit years and years ago in eighth grade, and who knows what the player they will be when they're graduating high school. But what age can the player now commit to a college verbally?
It depends on the level. And like you said, the rules are changing. I think like every second. So it really just depends on the level. Verbal commitments, right? They're not like technically set in stone. There's like the signing day where that's kind of like locking yourself in or whatever. But it really just depends on the level. And then there's all the recruiting guidelines as well that are different for each levels as well. And so one thing that I make my kids do is say, hey, okay, there's D1, D2, D3, NAIA, and JUCO. Okay, what are the recruiting rules here? Can you talk to coaches? Can the coach talk back to you? Okay, not for D1, right? We know that. Okay, but what are those rules so that I know them? I already know them, but they need to know them, you know? And a big thing is right at the higher levels, you know, coaches aren't going to get back to you. They're just not. You know, they can't, number one. Legally, they can't. And number two, they're so busy at times, right? So it's kind of helping them work through like, oh my gosh, the coach hasn't responded back to me. Well, it's okay. We will keep updating them on your play and your highlight videos and where you're gonna be, what showcases you're gonna be at. And then hopefully there will be a response, but you're not gonna get one right away. That's just it. And you have to kind of be okay with that and just be understanding that, you know, number one, they can't legally until a certain point in your recruiting process. And then, you know, they're so busy.
So for that information, do you give a packet for like study, like a study guide for these players coming in and these families to understand? Do you provide leaflets or anything like that, so they, when they do start working with you, they have Like they have the code of conduct they sign. They have these dates are critical for your player because of their age. Do you have all that laid out for them prior, or how do you do that?
Yeah, so at the beginning, like one of our at our signing meeting, not only do I give them kind of like where they're at, I do like kind of like a marketing, like a social media, like a look into their social media. Do they have it? You know, kind of what things are they posting? What could they post? Kind of like a frequency to start with, just so they get a little bit of education there, a little bit of value there, value on kind of where they're at. Where they could potentially go. And then I do give kind of like just a rough like guideline of like, okay, eighth grade, you know, these are kind of going to be the focuses. Ninth grade, these are going to be the focuses. Okay, we got to think about our testing and things like that. So I do lay that out. And another like amazing thing that I love that I've incorporated within Future Athletic is an online platform to where I can give them like monthly checklists. And that they can go through it. So they're journaling along with the process of like where we're at. So we'll have like, you know, monthly calls or every other month, you know, a call, like check in and be like, hey, how's it going? We can look through all of their stuff that they put in online on the platform and the checklist that I take them through within the platform. And then the other part of the technology I'm using is the filtering system of schools. And I think this is really interesting because this platform has basically all of the schools, coaches' information, social media's information on the school, and you can filter it based on like what my criteria is. So if I wanted to get a degree in psychology, you know, I could be like, okay, psychology degree, I want to stay in the South and I want to look at D2 schools. Right. And then boom, it kind of pops out a list of like all the schools based upon your criteria. And then from there, right now I can take it and be like, okay, this school, I'm a midfielder. Well, there's one midfielder graduating. So like probably not the spot for me, you know, if I truly want to come in and make an impact into the program. So now we're kind of filtering from there.
Now, with that being said, because you're breaking down by filtering by where they want to go, how does the transfer portal change all this? I know that in the men's side, it is very difficult. And the women's side is just as bad when it comes to soccer, because now every fall and every whatever time frame the window opens, you're having thousands of athletes in all sports changing direction. I mean, my favorite example right now is American football, and it is every fall there's a huge every winter once the season's over, you see all of a sudden all these players shift schools based on how their school did and that school did and if they can get into it. And I don't know how scholarships work, that's their problem at that point in time. But how does that affect your business then? Because like you said, if they're wanting to go to a college A and it has five midfielders retiring when I should be entering into college, and now all of a sudden the transfer window opens and the coach allowed in two or three midfielders, how does that change your strategy then for these players?
Yeah, good question. For me, the transfer window is important to understand, but it's hard to really say that I know this player is going to go here or here or here. I think if a college coach is wanting you as a player, like you're going to know that. So another thing that I talk about is like when you are choosing the right school is you can tell if the coach really wants you. Okay. I had a great experience at Tech and I knew Tom wanted me. And that's a great feeling. Like you want that feeling. And then the other part is like whenever I did step on campus, I just got this feeling that you can't really describe, that like it just felt right. It felt at home. And that's why I chose Tech, because when I did get on campus and I met Tom, I already knew Tom, right? Because he would be at tournaments and things like that. But when I finally got on campus, he showed me he really wanted me. And I just got this like indescribable feeling that I had to be like, this was the place for me. And I had canceled like my other things And I probably would have like verbally committed that day, but I was like, let me just like think about it and talk with my parents and kind of go through that. And so I think like 2 days later or like the next week I verbally committed because there was just that feeling. I wasn't worried about transfer window people. And I don't think that, like, I think it's something to think about, but I don't think that that needs to be a deciding factor because it's hard to really say. Now, okay, let's say I'm going in the next year and they just sign, five midfielders. Okay, then I would be like, okay, well, now I'm going to talk to the college coach who said he really wanted me or she really wanted me. And hey, okay, well, I saw that you just signed five midfielders. Like, where do you think I sit? Like, can I make an impact when I come in? So I think that's questions to the coach for sure, between you and the coach. But for me and for my business, it doesn't necessarily change my strategy. I will help ideate with the player of like, okay, well, you wanted to go here. They just signed five midfielders. Let's talk to the coach and figure that out. Are you able to come in and make an impact? Are you still able to get the scholarship dollars that you were told you would get? So that's kind of how I would help that side of things, but it doesn't really change, anything that I'm doing personally.
Awesome. Now, with every parent's goal is the financial freedom of having their kids go play. And I'm thinking soccer because that's what we're here talking about right now. Soccer tends to be, I call the ugly stepchild of sports because, especially on the men's side, they don't get as much money. The women's side tend to get a little bit more money, but if you aren't playing basketball or football, there's no real money out there, I feel. I've listened to enough podcasts to listen to like what college budgets are for a roster. They might be able to fill one or two full-time roster, or they can break it up, or scholarships, or break it up between multiple players. As this is going forward, do you see that changing in the soccer world because soccer is becoming more and more prevalent in the United States, and even more so with the World Cup coming up? It's just past the NHL to be the fourth watched sport in the country now. Do you see the dynamics possibly changing in the college world, or do you see it staying plateau where it's at, and you don't have to more focus on the academic side for scholarships for players?
Interesting question. I think that's
It's a
a
hard
very
one,
interesting
sorry.
question. No, it's okay. It's okay. I mean, I'll just kind of talk through like what I'm thinking because honestly, I haven't necessarily like kind of thought about it like this side. I think per regulations, right, there is a certain dollar amount that, each sport gets for scholarships, right? So it's like I'm thinking off the top of my head, I think D1 schools, right? I think there's 14 full rides that they can give out, but they could spread the 14 full rides across, the team if they needed to. Maybe there's one player that gets a full ride. Maybe there's one or two players that get a full ride, but the kind of the rest of the scholarship dollars gets passed, throughout the players. And some players are more so walk-ons and they don't get anything. So it really just depends. But as the popularity increases, I think it would be tough to change just because it is so highly regulated. I think the NCAA is going to have to, really like have some heavy discussions on that and think through, okay, well, if I think it comes, I think if soccer's bringing in potentially more money, like a football, basketball, maybe. But it's going to have to be like nationwide. And I just feel like it's going to be harder to do that because it is so regulated. But I mean, that is definitely an interesting question to like think about and understand because I don't know the answer to that question. But I think it's an interesting, question to like think about and really dive into because I just feel like it's going to be hard with the NCAA because they're so regulated. And they put a lot of rules on the schools based on the levels. And so they're gonna have to have heavy discussions, just like the NIL stuff, right? Okay, well, what's gonna happen with NIL? These players are now getting paid. Like what are they? So it's those are definitely interesting questions that have to have like a lot of discussions. And just like the NIL just passed, right? it's going to take a while, I think, for that to kind of change a little bit.
I only ask because I look at it as the fact that most players that go play soccer don't go on a soccer scholarship. They go on a academic or 50-50, depending on the agreement they had with the school at the time. And
hey everyone, as always, I abruptly ended the episode. Part two is next week. Katie was great to talk to. There's so much more in the next week's episode, so stay tuned and enjoy this episode and what she has to say. Hey everyone, if you guys have enjoyed this podcast, have enjoyed what I've been trying to do, the messages that I'm putting out there, please give me some ratings, some stars on all the podcast sites that you listen to this on. Give me a review, share this, share with others. The more I can make this grow, the more I can continue doing this. I'm really trying to make a difference in our soccer community. So I hope you guys have enjoyed all this. And until next time, I'll see you at the pitch.